Yeah, it's mad.
It's crazy. They rely on the corporates
mm.
to give a percentage of their profits.
Mm.
But we actually have a voluntary sector here.
Yeah.
And then in Europe, they rely heavily on the Erasmus program.
Oh, wow.
A lot of countries do learn from what we do, I guess. But we can do more because of the resources that we have at our disposal.
Hi guys, to another episode of What My Best Friend Does with me, your host Bio, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the youth project manager. I say best friend, more like best brother or just my brother. We're joined by Dej. Dej, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today, bro?
Yeah, I'm good, bro. I'm really excited to be here, excited to see what you're doing and just excited that I'm one of your best friends, best bros, whatever it is. But yeah, let's have a good show.
No, yeah. We like to start with a little icebreaker before we get into it. What did you want to be growing up?
You know, straight away, I wanted to be a footballer for Tottenham Hotspur. I wanted to be Harry Kane of the Premier League, banging in goals, left, right and centre. And then there was a moment where I wanted to be an astronaut. You know, why not go into space and, you know, catch some aliens maybe. And then, you know, and then there was even once upon a time that I thought I could, you know, just be like a fireman or something. But yeah.
Okay, so we had footballer, we had astronaut, we had fireman. Yeah. But we've managed to settle on youth project manager, yeah. Youth worker.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your journey to this point.
Yeah, well, I guess first and foremost, I think it's fair to say that I kind of fell into this space.
Mm.
So if I take you back, I went to around about when I was in year 12, I had a good friend called Jarrell. And at the time, Hackney was doing something called Hackney Summer University.
Mm.
Okay. And the summer university is over the 6 weeks holidays. You get to try out different courses, basically. Mm. And doing that course, there was a lot of young people, peer leaders. They called them motivators.
Mm-hmm.
And these motivators would go around encouraging young people to take part in the sessions. And if they needed anything, like a drink or whatever it is they need, pencils, pens, they would go and get it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got along with them and they invited me back the next year. And the next year I became a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
I came back again. I became a team leader. And then I went off to uni. You know, I went off to uni. I did law, which is completely different. And then I came back. And one of the good friends there, KG, actually said, look, you know, we have a job going for you. And at the time, coming out of university, you know what it's like. It's so hard to find a job straight away.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, yeah, let me just lead a project, you know, for a few months while I'm looking for a legal job.
Mm-hmm.
A few months has basically turned into over 20 years, basically. So I wasn't intending to be there, but at the same time, I do love it. And yeah, it's all I know.
And you mentioned that you obviously got this job out of university. Who was the job with initially out of university? And has it stayed the same over the 20-year period?
Okay, yeah. So when I came out of uni, I was working for an organisation called CityZen.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my job at the time was to coordinate a sexual health programme.
I remember.
Changing, you know, well, supporting young people who would go out and deliver like sexual health workshops. It was called Clued Up at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left that organisation. I was there for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined an organisation called Immediate Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Where I ran the same similar project, but it's called Meet the Parents.
Mm-hmm.
In Tower Hamlets for about another 2 years. Around about 2012, you know, due to just after the kind of the riots,
mm-hmm.
There was a lot of funding cuts in the area, and I was hit by those funding cuts. So mm-hmm. I kind of came out of the space for about a year. And then I was fortunate enough, I got a phone call randomly from the director of Immediate Theatre saying, look, I'm going to link you to this organisation called Hackney CVS.
Mm.
And at the time, because of the riots had just happened, there was a lot of concern that the riots could happen again.
Mm.
So the police wanted to build relationship with the community.
Mm.
And so given my legal experience and also my youth work experience, they thought it makes sense to have someone who could come in and hold that space.
Mm.
And so I went to Hackney CVS on a 3-month contract and really to kind of build bridges. And that 3 months turned into over 12 years.
Wow. And you say build bridges between who and who?
Yeah. So building bridges was really, I set up a project called the Young People Stop and Search Monitoring Group. And it was really about building bridges between the community and the police. Police have a perception of the community. Community have a perception of the police. Could we meet in the middle?
Mm.
We were never going to hold hands and go skipping into the sunset. What could we have increase understanding at least so we can see maybe less stop and searches?
Yeah.
A young black man's 5-6 times more likely to be stopped and searched. Really wanting to kind of get underneath that and understand so police feel comfortable, but also the people of the community feel comfortable when they see the police. I mean, it was an ambitious target. I would say we had some successes, but as you can see in the news, in the media today, it's a big job, and there's always work to be done in that space.
I've got so many questions as you talk about this. So as you've tried to bridge the gap between the public's perception of the police and the police's perception of the public, where is, I suppose, the majority of your time spent focused? Is it with the public? Is it with the police? Or was it an equal amount of time?
Yeah, no. So good question. The majority of the time is all about empowering the community.
Mm-hmm.
So all of my time was in the community,
mm-hmm.
working with organisations, other voluntary sector organisations or charities, working with young people. And we had workshops, Know Your Right workshops. We had debates. You know, whenever there was an issue, we were dealing with complaints, police complaints. So that was the focus. But at the same time, you can't do that work in a vacuum. I don't think you can. You need the police. You need to have some sort of contact with the police. I don't want to say relationship, but you need to be having a conversation with them so that you can influence change. And you can also influence policing. I mean, I would like to say that during the Olympics 2012, we saw a massive reduction. So, you know, stop and search around that time was about 1,400 stops was happening in Hackney as a borough per month. And that figure came down to about 350, 400.
And that's
partly, I'm not going to say that it's all because of the work I was doing, but definitely the work that I was involved in had made a contributory factor for that, for sure.
The reason I'm laughing is because I was thinking the 1,400 came down to 350 because everybody had hopped on the train to Stratford. And they didn't get picked up there.
Yeah. It could well be.
The overground train.
And we had the Olympics as well.
Let me not take away from your work. So talk to me about, as a youth project manager, like what does a typical day and week look like for you?
Yeah, so a typical day is... I mean, it's mad. So there's no kind of set day. Any day I go into the office, anything can happen.
Mm.
But ideally, what I am doing is I'm thinking about youth leadership, about young people having genuine voices.
Mm.
So any work could be making sure that young people are around the table when decisions are being made about changes that are going to be happening in schools, changes that are going to be happening in mental health services, changes that are going to be happening something as little as parking or working with exclusion. So fortunately, I built up a relationship with the local authority that any decisions that they were about to make, they would invite the VCS, the Hackney CVS, to come in and have a contribution before they roll out this new policy. And we would always be around the table, and that's how we got it.
And you mentioned always, trying to consult the youth. Where did you find these youth that you were consulting?
Yeah, so I think Hackney is probably one of the fortunate boroughs in the country, to be fair. But, you know, going into local youth clubs, going into schools, and actually going out on streets, stopping young people, talking to people, talking to young people after school, were the ways in which I recruited. And then because the VCS, Hackney CVS, was the umbrella organisation for all of the charities in Hackney, or at least for those who are members, then you just reach out to the membership. Do you know anyone who wants to be an advocate, who wants to has a passion for young people and wants to be a voice? And so getting hold of young people was kind of the easy part. I guess the difficult part was getting policy decision makers to listen to the views of young people. But I'm delighted to say that that is a piece of work that I worked on over time, and we had plenty of success, you know.
I love to hear that. And you spoke, you touched upon like stop and search being like a major issue. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other most common issues and challenges that young people face today? And how have you addressed this in your role?
I mean, all I do with my work, which I'm thankful for, is I just do what I wish I had, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's not rocket science. Mm-hmm. But I also felt that the fabrics of life, the structures that we have, mm-hmm. why do we have those structures? Mm-hmm. Why do we have to go on Google and apply to an employment service and put our CV there, and mm-hmm. your CV might be seen or it might not be seen? Mm-hmm. Surely there must be another way. Mm-hmm. And so I worked on another project called Talent Match. And what that was about bridging the gap now between young people and employers, especially employers in the city. And what we did was we tried to change that. Too often, we are at the kind of mercy of employers. You've got to give your CV, you've got to wear a suit and tie, you've got to be the best that you can be. That's quite a lot of pressure. And so what I was thinking was, how can I put the pressure away from young people and put the pressure on the employer?
Yeah.
And so we did that by creating an event. We do events. And rather than young people giving their CVs, mm-hmm. we had employers pitching their jobs. Yeah, and that just changed the dynamic. And then young people then, while there's food and drink going on as well, soft drinks, by the way, and at the rooftop in Hackney, you know, nice, quite trendy venues as well.
Yeah.
Then young people are less, you know, some people just don't interview well. But actually, if you speak to them on a level, just having a drink or, you know, and eating some food, you get to understand who they are.
100%.
And so that's the environment that we created. And and we've supported over 5 years, almost 250 young people into employment.
Wow.
Which was a massive, and it's not just us, me, it mm-hmm. was the partnership. Mm-hmm. But it was a huge achievement for us and the work that we did.
And you mentioned, you know, employers kind of pitching their jobs to people. Mm. Was there a particular industry focus, or was it jobs from any walk of life?
Yeah, so, I mean, young people, what I was doing was I was focusing on employers who had an interest in young people or wanted to get younger people into their organisations. Not all employers were receptive to, you know, my ideas, but the ones that were, we had fantastic results. What I wanted is to be in a room. I literally had, I kid you not, a young person who was a GAS, just finished his GAS qualification. I can name companies, can't I?
Yeah. Not.
Mighty, one of the senior directions for Mighty. Mighty is a massive company. They've got security, they do maintenance, that kind of things. Head of recruitment I had a relationship with that individual. And he happened to be in my office that day, and I was having a kind of youth meeting. And whilst that, I just got each of the young people to just introduce themselves. And this particular young person introduced himself and talked about the fact that he just got a GAS qualification.
Mm.
In that moment, he stopped him and he said, you know what? I'm going to give you 2 weeks' work experience at my organisation.
Wow.
True to word, he arranged a 2 weeks' work experience. I kid you not, that guy is still working there today, and that was 6 years ago.
Wow.
And that's what I want. If not for that moment, if not for that meeting, that wouldn't have happened.
Mm.
And it was about creating moments, special moments like that, where you can meet someone of influence, someone of change, and you can give someone who, under normal circumstances, wouldn't have hope, and then they get an opportunity. And then I took that to another layer, working with a charity called East London Business Alliance, and they came up with something called the Parity Project.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I'm just going to keep it real, I didn't see many young black men in corporate jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a presentation at Barclays where I said, my city is your city. Mm-hmm. Can someone who looks like me be able to access Liverpool Street and some of the jobs, Deutsche Bank, UBS. UBS, all of that. Mm-hmm. And so we set up a parity project, got four organisations, State Street, American Bank, XL Catlin, Nomura Bank,
mm-hmm.
and their focus was, let's try and get young black men into our organisations.
And are these like part of the groups where 250 people...
No, unless that was separate. Okay, so this that is was separate. Separate to that. But
wow.
You can see that my whole thing was all about, and that's bridging the gap.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making what seems so far away closer and more accessible.
And, you know, something that's ringing in my head as we talk about this, you know, we're talking about accessibility. We're talking about the fact that, you know, this typically wouldn't be realistic.
Yeah.
You know, for the listener who might be oblivious to this, why are these jobs typically not attainable?
I think whether you like it or not, as I grow older, it's about connection and your social capital, social network. What I'm trying to do is build an individual social network. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you're the first person from your family to have gone to university.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to some who've come from a generation that have been to university, some parents have that connection, they can pick up a call and their friends is a director of an asset management company. Next minute, you're there doing work experience.
Mm.
A lot of young people in inner city London just don't have those connections.
Mm.
And so really what I was trying to do is to build that network organically so that they can go off and start to build on their careers. Because without that head of recruitment, we would have to send a CV. Someone's looking at that CV. If the CV is not up to scratch, that person doesn't get a chance. But the CV doesn't really determine whether you can do a job or not. Maybe you're just rubbish at writing your CV. Mm. Maybe you're just rubbish at doing interviews.
Mm.
So can we get someone actually doing the job? Forget all of that stuff, because that's just the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, let's put the person in the sharp end. And that's really what I've been about, and that's what my work is about.
I knew my brother was a top individual, but it's really great to hear this and be able to share this with people.
Yeah.
From the young person's perspective, you know, for any potential inner city London kids or any kids who are potentially looking for an avenue into a career, I think this is one of the reasons for this podcast.
Mm.
But what are the kind of resources that are available? You know, you've mentioned the work that you're doing, but how does a young person come to learn about these initiatives?
Yeah, so I think the key thing for me would be if a young person, whatever area, they've got to tap into their local youth club first and foremost. You tap into your local youth club, they will have connections with the council. So you find that some councils have dedicated employment units.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those youth clubs, actually, just because the way youth work is set up, we do everything to do with the child, whether it's housing, food. They will have connections to employers, or they will have connections to individuals like myself who specializes in this field. And then we can reach out and make those connections. But you have to. And then some of us go into schools. But really and truly, I would always start with your local youth club or your local CVS.
Mm-hmm. What does CVS stand for?
So voluntary sector for voluntary service.
Okay.
Yeah. There's so basically the middle organization between the community and the local authority. Go to your local CVS and they should have the information on the local organisations in your area that can help, without a doubt. If they don't have that information, then they're not doing their job.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Go to your local youth club.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, yeah, we've kind of spoken about, I suppose, a lot of different stakeholders, right? Whether it be the individual, whether it be the organisations. There's a lot of community engagement. How do you build those strong relationships with stakeholders and community to help enhance your project outcomes?
Yeah, so I think one of the key skills, how do I build? I think you've got to do the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's one of those sectors, youth work. There are no shortcuts. First and foremost, you're dealing with real people. You're dealing with people, and you're dealing with young people. And one thing that young person will always show you is young people recognize if you're genuine, real recognize real.
Yep.
If they know you're fake, they will let you know you're fake. And if they feel that you're real, they will let you know that you're real.
Mm-hmm.
And being real is really about just genuinely caring, having the time. So, for example, when I moved borough, I did some work in Brent for a while. One of the first things I tried to do in the first 6 months, and this is just before the pandemic started, was to go around and meet every organisation face to face. And in fact, some organisations were shocked. They're like, we've never seen someone come to our youth club from an organisation like yourself. Why did you come? And I said, well, I want to meet you. I want to know you. I want to know what you do, so that when I'm writing funding bids or if I'm doing any kind of capacity building developmental work, I know exactly what you need. But equally, I know how to sell you and what you do to other organisations to kind of bring in funding. So You got to put the work in. But when you put the work in, one thing I can say is that you're only, when you're project managing, you're only as good as your partners. So if your partners are good, you look good, mm-hmm. obviously. So make sure they look good. Yeah. And so give them the love, give them the time. If you do that, they'll do it back to for you.
I hear that. And, you know, you touched upon the fact that if, you know, kids can see fakeness, yeah. And they real recognize real. Mm. The question I have here is, like, how do you establish that trust and rapport with the young people you work with? And are there any specific strategies that you find effective? Is it just being real?
it's a bit of that, but I've kind of changed the way that I work. I think it's about being real, and it's about what I call having tangible outcomes. Mm-hmm. So for me, I like to set ambitious targets, and then it's about trying to meet those targets. What a young person wants is more than you coming to tell your story. Mm-hmm. If someone's looking for work, for example,
yeah,
what's your story? What's that doing for them? For some, it might move them. That's great. But for some, they just need a tenner. Mm. They just need to buy some food or 15 quid, an opportunity. And I'll give you an example of real, recognised real. I've been working in some schools recently and working with young people. A lot of these young people had an interest in football. Mm. So what I did was I got a coach that I know, a well-known coach who's got good links to football teams. And we organised a showcase match. And he put it on video cam and we recorded the game. And he said to the boys, look, I'm gonna send this to clubs, yeah, to have a look at. These boys, they've never had an opportunity like this before. Not at least most of them. Mm-hmm. But equally, are you selling us a dream? Mm. Are you lying to us? You know, who are you? Anyway, to cut a long story short, out of the 30 boys that turned up, we identified 5. Believe three of the boys got a call back from Chelsea. And I just got an email just now before we started this podcast that one of those boys has been invited to play for Chelsea next week on a trial.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about. So that person goes back to school for year 11 and it's probably going to be in a different mind frame because he's thinking, mate, if I focus and I work hard and I train hard, mate, he could be playing for Chelsea in the next few months. Mm-hmm. His life has changed. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And it's about changing one person's life one step at a time. So for me, I'm looking for the tangible opportunities, like the one I told you with Mighty, like others. And there's plenty of examples of that. And I think that's where I find the most pleasure. That's where I find the most joy in supporting a young person to get a tangible outcome. And if we're able to get a fantastic footballer, all I'm asking for is some VIP tickets to see Spurs beat Chelsea. That's what I'm asking for. Yeah,
we knew that there was going to be some talk of Spurs during this podcast. So you've mentioned some of the things that you do to measure success. How do you measure the impact and success of a project beyond traditional metrics?
So for me, first and foremost, I don't follow traditional metrics. Okay. I think for me, the measure of success is the fruits of your labour. That there with the boy going to Chelsea, that's a fantastic metrics. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter what we did to get there. Mm-hmm. That is the outcome. What I like to see, and I think, is the young people. Mm-hmm. When you're able to call on 50 young people, 60 young people, 70, 80, who all say the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's more powerful than any report. Mm-hmm. That's more powerful than numbers, where people can tell you, look, this is the impact that this project has had. And that's for me what I focus on.
Do you have a lot of the boys who you work with giving back and like coming and doing talks to like the younger generation?
Yeah, we got what I call peer leaders who are doing that, giving back, running workshops now. And some of them are being employed by my organisation as well, and they're delivering those work in schools. But I guess, like I was saying, the metrics is people want it. People are looking for it. Mm. People are looking for our programme. People are looking for our intervention. And also, people want to partner with us. And I think that speaks volumes. And actually, what you find is that does all the hard work. You don't have to go out and do applications. You don't have to do X, Y, Z. Because once you've got a solid foundation and you're good at what you do, then the rest is easy. It's like I say when you want to support somebody into work. I always say to people, I don't support young people into work anymore. I don't do CVs. I don't do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
They find the job themselves. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I found myself on that talent match project three and a half years in, not having to do any CV writing or any job searches, because the young people were in a place where they were just going out and getting their own jobs. And all I would just be getting is just emails saying, this person's got a job, this person's got a job.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most things I was doing was writing references. Mm-hmm. I was like writing 5 to 6 references a week. It does get long, writing references. It's long. It gets boring.
Yeah.
But that's where you want to be. That's the ideal place.
And in terms of like the work that, you know, you do, is it, like you say, is it like London focused, or is it are there any national wide programs that are being run?
Yeah, so one thing I'm all about is I'm all about partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And so the organisations I work for, we are partnering with large organisations. But now our work is spans international.
Oh,
so
wow.
We have a project next year that will be taking young people from here to New York.
Oh, wow.
And some young people from New York to London. We're also planning to do the same in Joburg, taking some young Londoners to South Africa, mm-hmm. and bringing some South African young people to London. And then, you know, so it's not just, this work is all about what I call test and learn and sharing. We can always share good practice from overseas and equally share what we've learned here, and that's what we're all about. And the world is bigger than just London.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so it's about making those global connections.
All right, so you mentioned test and learn there, and the fact that, yeah, the world is definitely bigger than London. Are there any other countries or cities where you look to them and you go, damn, they're running some deep stuff with their youth, and you know, we want to try and emulate them?
To be fair, you know what, I was fortunate enough before Brexit actually to be part of the Erasmus program,
mm-hmm.
and so I had the opportunity to meet colleagues in Turkey, mm-hmm. In Amsterdam. I would say that we're fortunate in the UK because we have, it's actually a sector. Like in the US, they don't have a voluntary sector.
Yeah, it's mad.
It's crazy. They rely on the corporates
mm.
to give a percentage of their profits.
Mm.
But we actually have a voluntary sector here.
Yeah.
And then in Europe, they rely heavily on the Erasmus program. Okay. They don't really have a network system that allows them to get funding the way that we get funding here.
Yeah.
So I think there is no better place to be than here.
Oh, wow.
A lot of countries do learn from what we do, I guess. We also learn from them. But I guess we're fortunate because we just have more access to more resources. I'm not saying we're the best,
mm-hmm.
but we can do more because of the resources that we have at our disposal.
We spoke about like the peer leaders, but in your experience, what role does mentorship and positive role models play in shaping the lives of like, young individuals?
Mentorship is just a standard. That should just be a byproduct of everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think a mentor is it's like a guardian angel, is how I see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who helps to help you make the right decisions, you know. And so what I tend to do is I have a peer model. I'm getting on. So, you know, young people are more likely to respond to people who are young, who are quite trendy and kind of look like them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're offering that support. Yeah, so mentorship is an important part of youth work. Mentorship is in the fabric of what we do. It's a byproduct. The difficulty comes where capacity. You know, there's only one Deji, as it were, and there's some youth workers, there's only one of them. They do an amazing job, but they can't be all things for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about really upskilling the sector as a whole. I think too often we rely on professionals to do that job.
Mm-hmm.
I think some professionals can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mentorship is a profession in itself.
Yeah.
You know, and I think more time and resource, it's something that is under-resourced for what it is. And I think we need more money pumped into it because it's probably one of the only things that has the most impact. Sitting down once a week or once every 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
where someone wants to know you,
mm-hmm.
for an hour.
Yeah.
I don't remember even many. How Do even parents have time to sit down with their kids once every 2 weeks to find out what's going on?
I think
it's tough.
Not in every household.
Exactly. So yeah. It's so...
A lot of households are just trying to survive, right?
Right. So, therefore, you know, more resource needs to be pumped in to make sure that those kind of conversations are taking place. Because that's where the shaping of the individual is happening.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that, you know, there might not be enough resources for, like, mentorship and, you know, some of the roles in general. Like, working with young people can be both fulfilling and demanding. But how do you maintain that balance between providing support and avoiding that burnout with everything that you do?
I have to say, I was one of those people, especially earlier on, where I was burnt out because I was doing 9 till 9. You know, partly because it's not like an office-based job, really. There's some office parts, but most of the part you're in meetings, you're doing activities, but it can eat into your day. Yeah, I've just learned over time that I've had to be strict. You know, I've got a family now, and I have a lot of after-school activities that I have to personally attend to, and I make sure that I'm there, and that's what provides balance. And it's also about just taking holiday, because when you're doing this work, you're hearing so much positive, but also so much negative that you have to hold, and actually that can build up.
Mm-hmm.
So also having within the organisation a space where you can speak to someone else, and all the stuff that you've received from the young people that you've been working with, you are now able to kind of park it somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's so important. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think more recently I've become more smarter with my time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I know myself more and the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm more efficient in how I do my work.
Nice.
And I feel like some organisations, they lack the efficiency because they haven't had time to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had time to think outside the box.
Nice.
So I have a good balance.
Okay, personally. Nice. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that it can get intense, right? What would you say the most stressful thing about your role is?
You've got a young person that is hungry, or they've got a family but they can't go home to their family. I had a situation where I had a young person who was being kicked out of their hostel and had nowhere to live. You can't take that young person home.
Yeah.
You're trying to support somebody who you know now is homeless, and they need to eat, but also they need a roof over their head, and then you're being told by services that they need to be in the park and somebody will come by in the next 24 hours. I mean, that's a lot of stress because you're also thinking about the young person's safety.
Yeah, of course.
And these are some of the things that we are having to deal with. And when you know a young person, it's like having a friend who's struggling. You say, look, come to my house, sleep on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that for safeguarding reasons. It does become very, very stressful very, very quickly. Or if you lose a young person, you know, I've had in my time, I think I've lost 5 young people to knife crime or a shooting, you know. And these are people that you worked with or you spoke to the day before, and then the next minute they're no longer with us. And you hold that, and you have to then deal with the repercussions of how the other young people in the team are feeling, but also the community repercussions, mm-hmm. because one of them was high profile, you know, and you have to kind of manage that and be strong,
mm-hmm.
because you have to be strong for the people that you're working with. If you're not strong,
mm-hmm.
then how can they be pulled out of wherever it is? So it can be very, very difficult. And I think, like, some people underestimate the work that we do and the impact that we have.
You know, you mentioned there, you know, the fact that you've lost people that you've worked with, and, you know, to knife crime, gun crime. Like, do you ever feel like your safety is in jeopardy doing what you do?
Funny enough, actually, there was a time where, about three years ago, so first and foremost, I like to say I still kind of look youngish, even though I do feel old. At least I like to tell myself that. But yeah, of course. Because there was times where there were just shootings going on, or people are just getting the wrong person. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They think, oh, you look like somebody, and then boom. So, yeah, the thought does cross my mind, but at the same time, I feel like there's certain ways in which you carry yourself, and that young people know, look, you're not really about it, or you're not really the kind of person I'm looking for. Mm. That makes sense.
Mm.
But am I afraid to go into an area and do my work? No. I will always go in. I don't want to lose my life to it, though.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think anyone who's real enough... Look, the fact of the matter is, the young people in the main, they just want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said to you, they're savvy enough to know who's real.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're about here trying to improve the community and trying to improve their life, mm-hmm. then they're not stupid, they're not dummies.
Mm-hmm.
They want their life to be improved. They want the support, they want the activities, they want the access to jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They will go for it. I think, so generally speaking, youth workers are fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've ever heard anything where youth workers, it can happen sometimes randomly, but... I've not heard of anything like that, so I've never felt worried at all.
All right, nice. And flipping the script, I know we kind of we spoke about, you know, some of the stresses. What would you say the most rewarding part of being a youth worker is?
The rewarding part is the outcomes. I had a couple of years ago where they did a kind of celebration event, actually, which was so nice. And to see people that you worked with go on to be a success, go on to have their own families,
mm-hmm.
go into job opportunities that they want, and they're now successful. There is no bigger reward. But also, the fact that they have said that you had a part to play in that journey,
mm-hmm.
that there's no bigger gratitude, to be honest, no bigger thing that I've experienced. To see people I worked with years ago making successes of themselves and saying, well, it was because you had a part to play. Thank you for intervening when you did. Thank mm-hmm. you for catching me when you did. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, for example, imagine if this person who's trialing next week becomes a player under Pochettino, you know, in the next couple of years at Chelsea. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And to think that this idea of a showcase came about in a off-the-cuff conversation with them in one session,
mm-hmm.
led to a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
Led to someone now having a trial match next week at Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
The next bit now for this story is he gets a contract. Bloody hell, mate. It's fantastic. Do you know what I mean? There's no big reward.
It's funny because I have a question here, and it's like, can you share a memorable success story where your involvement as a youth worker had a significant positive impact on a young person's life? And I feel like during the course of this conversation, we've had at least a couple. So we've had the potential footballer, and we've also had the person who had their GAS qualification and is now working there. Do any other examples spring to mind? I'm putting you on the spot. You've already given me two, so no worries if not.
Yeah. No. I mean, someone who got a job, like something as a corporate receptionist role,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, which is quite hard to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was able to build a relationship with a company called Office Concierge, and
mm-hmm.
that person got a job there and it's gone on to do great work within the corporate space. Yeah, there's loads. I can't think of one at the moment.
No, that was one. There's been plenty, so thank you for that. Can you share any upcoming or ongoing youth projects you're excited about, and what impact you hope they will have on the community or society?
Yeah. So I've just set up an organisation, actually, mm-hmm. a CIC called Changing Youth,
mm-hmm.
With a few friends of mine. And really, that's about really trying to fix some of the gaps that I see. So one of my biggest drivers is professionalising the voluntary sector.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Really looking at efficient ways. Because one of the things that I find with the voluntary sector is people are really good at what they do,
mm-hmm.
but they're underpaid,
mm-hmm.
highly skilled.
Mm-hmm.
And can we bridge that gap? Yeah. And they don't have time to be faffing about with some of the paperwork and the hoops that they have to jump through with some of the funders. And so we want to look at a way to kind of cover all of those bases, to provide project management support, to provide some capacity building support, so that these organisations can focus on what they're good at, which is the day-to-day job that they do. And so, yeah, we've got a couple of things in the pipeline to look at that and do that. Mm-hmm. We've also got a project called Global Citizen, like I told you, the trips to Joburg mm-hmm. is going to be that and expanding our reach globally. Mm-hmm. And then we're delivering a fantastic project in schools called Tree of Life, which is so powerful. And it's and I would love to see that grow and become like a national project in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that really is about taking a young person through a individual journey through a tree, actually. Mm-hmm. And over 5 weeks, you produce a tree. But what that does is that they get to understand who they are. Mm-hmm. I always say that it's very hard to navigate life if you don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. And this is about anchoring that young person or that individual or organization in what their values are and who they are, and then strength, and then focusing on their positives and really driving that home. How often it's very well, it's so easy for us to talk about what we're not good at, but it's so hard to talk about what we are. Mm-hmm. And so it's about reframing the mindset to look at one's strength.
You've heard it here first. Tree of Life. If there's any documentation we can share on it, I'll be sure to do so. But talking about you know, people's strengths and weaknesses, what would you say is an uncommon skill you see amongst like the best youth workers and project managers that you work with?
It's the soft skills, you know. Mm. It's your ability to be able to obviously build relationships with different stakeholders. But one thing that the youth worker has is to go the extra mile and to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's required is you have to be creative. Mm-hmm. Knowingly or unknowingly. Because to come up with a project, you have to come up with the idea. What is it that you're going to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know you want to tackle something, but still the idea, the name of the project. Mm-hmm. So, for example, that showcase that I did. I've now coined that showcase, that project, which we'll be doing again, Mind Like a Pro. And the reason why I called it Mind Like a Pro is because whether you become a footballer or not, what we want these young people that we work with to have is a mind of a professional. Mm-hmm. Just be professional. Mm-hmm. And that looks at punctuality, that looks at, you know, how you carry yourself, that looks at your mindset. And you know, but that and now we've got an agreement almost in place with another charity, mm-hmm. with a Premier League football club, mm-hmm. you know, where we're going to be doing this dedicated service. Mm-hmm. But that requires outside of the box thinking, you know. Yeah. And so if you have that and you're creative, and you're willing to give time, and mm-hmm. you like people, you're genuine about people, then you can be a youth worker and you can be successful in that space.
I love it. And I feel like Mind Like a Pro, there could be some merchandise there.
Yeah.
MLP. what do you think the biggest factor in making you successful has been? Because, you know, from this conversation, it sounds like pretty much from like second or third year of the summer university stuff, you've always been in leadership.
Yeah.
Like, how have you been in leadership for so long? And yeah, what do you think has played a part in you being, getting you to where you are?
I'm just thankful to God. But yeah, I think you have to have leadership qualities. Fortunately, my space has been youth leadership. Mm-hmm. And the ability to kind of see the gaps. And I think I've always been someone who, knowingly or unknowingly, and I've always just slightly just been ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. I think for any successful entrepreneur or business, you just have to be ahead of the curve in terms of what is in, what's hot, what's likely to be funded. And then you see the shift. And fortunately, like I said, the work that I've been doing over the years has always just slightly been ahead, and then others catch up. So, mm-hmm. you know, youth leadership was a thing before I was doing it. I mean, it's what I grew up on, to be honest, mm-hmm. working with Citizen and the immediate theatre. Mm-hmm. But it really kind of just went off, you know, during the time I was at Hackney CVS. And a lot of organisations who weren't doing it then cottoned on. Now, youth leadership is standard.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run a project with a local authority or even a housing association without them saying, we need young people at the table. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the case 10 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some of the work has kind of influenced that. So, yeah. I would say that. Yeah.
Oh, sorry to jump in there. This might be a silly question. I feel like I know the answer, but do you enjoy what you do?
Yeah, I love what I do. I think for me personally, though, I'm in a different space. I'm probably more over time, you just naturally gravitate to the offices more.
Mm-hmm.
But I've taken more of a step back and more wanting to play more strategic role.
Mm-hmm.
But I have teams of young people now who are doing what I used to do. And so I think one of the things you have to be prepared to do in youth work or in business is to prepare the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I am at the moment. I'm actively looking for people who are going to take the baton on, you know, when I stop working.
Mm.
And it's about building the team. I don't think youth work is for everyone. But one thing I do believe in, and I believe in it strongly, is that when you find someone who is talented,
mm-hmm.
you just don't let them go. And I learned that from my CEO, Jake, at the CVS, someone who I appreciate a lot, actually, because he had a tremendous influence in my life. There was many times I wanted to leave that organisation.
Yeah.
Not for negative, I just wanted to kind of move on.
Mm-hmm.
But he refused to let me go, and I think there's something of value in that.
Yeah.
You know, if someone is good, don't let them go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what makes youth workers powerful is the fact that they've been here over time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a job where... You know, you have people chopping and changing.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be amazing that the office that I was working in 10 years ago, on your way home, you just pop in and just say hi to Dej?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that kind of consistency and knowing that, oh, he's just, if I need to speak to Dej, he's just there. He's in the office. I can go and see him.
Mm-hmm.
I think is more powerful and being accessible. The pandemic changed that, of course. But that's true youth work.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned being burnt out earlier.
Mm.
Do you think now you've got a good work-life balance?
I think for me, I fight hard every day to ensure I have a good work-life balance. And I talked about the fact that I'm trying to professionalise the sector.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason for the burnout is because the sector is so poorly paid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had someone... You know, my equivalent in the council is earning more than me, and they're not even management.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've been doing the last 2 to 3 years is trying to professionalise the sector, and I'm making slow strides, but that starts in all youth workers valuing their time.
Yeah.
Too often, youth workers just take what they're being offered.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to be bold and say, actually, no, I'm worth more than that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've known people who couldn't afford to come to work. But when you're working for, what, 11 quid an hour, it's a nonsense, you know?
Mm.
So I'm pushing to professionalise the sector. I'm in a good space because I balance my work with private work,
mm-hmm.
which kind of makes it kind of livable, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Supplements your income.
It supplements the income.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if the sector was paying right, I wouldn't need to do that, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. So... and that's something that I'm looking at and encouraging, and we'll see how that goes.
And all right, we've spoken about you know, improving the standards and what you do. How do you unwind?
Yeah, well, I chill, man. I chill. I'm a series. Me and Netflix, we're best friends. You know, I love Netflix. I can do a series in a couple of days.
Mm.
But to be fair, look, I you know, it's people know I love football.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that my son and daughter play. And my son in particular plays at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to miss a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to miss a training, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of in that space. I'm unwinding, and
yeah.
And that's where I want to be, and that's where I find my joy at the moment. So long may it continue. But you know, grassroots kids football ain't no joke. That's a series in itself.
So you see yourself becoming the Maurizio Pochettino of the under eights.
Mate, Project Mbappe is unloading right now.
I love it. I love it. Bro, this has been great. As we kind of come to an end of this segment, final couple of questions. One, where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years? You know, you've mentioned the fact that you're kind of taking a step back, you're training the next generation. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, so like I said, I've started this organization called Changing Youth. Mm-hmm. I hope, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years that we can build an organization of 100 strong, mm-hmm. Probably, and where we've got several products that we're actively selling. So one of the things that I believe in is that the voluntary sector is too heavily reliant on funding. Mm-hmm. And I also think because we're so heavily reliant on funding, sometimes it just affects the quality of the work. Mm-hmm. I believe if you produce good work, people should be willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just common sense. Yeah. That's the laws of business.
Yeah.
So I want to develop my organization in a way where it's so good that people want to pay for our services, mm-hmm. and be self-sustainable. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hoping for in the next 5 years, that we can be self-sustainable and not rely on any funding at all.
Amazing. And then, you know, for any young people listening to this podcast and potentially want to get started as a youth worker, or any people who are potentially looking at an industry switch into youth work, what would be your key piece of advice for them?
Key piece of advice, I think youth work, you've got to volunteer in your local youth club. I know some people don't enjoy volunteering, but it's literally a little bit like the creative industry. If you're not on set being a runner, you're not going to meet a director, you're not going to meet a film person who can then take you to the next project. Mm-hmm. That's youth work. You've got to give your time. There's no shortcuts. So find your local youth club, volunteer. It could even be a local football team. Volunteer there, you know, get your DBS done. And then that should set you on your way. And then you can start applying, you know. And then when you're at your local youth club, you can apply for small pots of funding from the local authority, maybe £1,000, £2,000 to do a half term of activities, that type of thing. And then you'll slowly start to find your space. For some people, they start off in the youth club, but then they end up, their specialism is probation, you mm-hmm. know, working with young people who've offended, or some people want to work with the gifted and talented. You will find your space within that space, mm-hmm. but you've got to give time. So volunteer at a youth club first, mm-hmm. and then see what door opens next.
Dead. Yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much for all of this insight. I feel like I generally now know what you've been doing for the last 20 years. Yeah. I mean, I've always introduced you as my brother who works for the council. Yeah, yeah, he's like a youth worker, but I haven't actually known. So it's been great to kind of learn and hear these stories in detail. Yeah, just a little quick fire round so the listeners can get to know a little bit more about you before we wrap up.
Yep.
Work from home or work from the office?
Work from home, man.
Money or happiness?
Happiness, to be fair, happiness.
There was a long pause there, which meant he wanted to say money. Favourite day of the week?
Favourite day of the week?
Yeah.
Friday.
Okay, nice. Time in a group or time alone?
Time in a group.
He's got 5 kids. Of course it was going to be time in a group. If you said time alone, I'd be worried. Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Future.
Favourite book?
The Name Slips Me.
Rich Dad Poor Dad.
The name slips me. I'll come back to me.
All right, we'll come back. Night out or night in?
Night in, you know.
Who has it easier, men or women?
Men.
Good. Are you listening to any good podcasts at the moment?
No.
Are you hosting any good podcasts at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I do some podcasts, some Spurs, but the stuff I listen to at the moment is absolutely trash talking podcasts of football stuff where everyone is just bantering. But to be fair, I do listen to one good one actually called We Are Tottenham TV, Paxton Road, who gives me all my daily updates for all things Spurs, which means I don't have to watch terrestrial TV anymore. I just go on YouTube. So that's where
Bun paying the TV license. Am I right?
Bun that.
No, Dej, this has been yeah, like I said, such a great conversation. Just a final thing we like to do on the podcast. We've got a closing tradition here. You know, based on everything we've discussed today and your journey to this point, what advice would you give to your 16-year-old self? And would you still be doing the same thing, knowing what you know now?
Yeah. So the advice I'd give to my 16-year-old self is, first of all, you didn't need to go off and study law. That's the first thing. I studied law. But the advice I would give would be to be more confident in yourself. Mm-hmm. I think it took me a long time to value my work, but also my creativity. Mm-hmm. And to understand behind the scenes as quickly as you can. Mm-hmm. Because I'm only realizing things now at almost 40 that I really wish I knew 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Because if I did, me gone clear. You know, so that's what I would, that would be my advice. Understand behind the scenes the mechanics of
how. And would you still be doing the same thing?
Yeah.
Look at that. Said that.
But I probably would have started my organisation a hell of a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm, I hear that. Bro, this has been great. For any people who have listened and gotten to this point, are there any socials, any resources that you want to plug?
Yeah, no. Look, anyone that's interested in youth work or anyone that's interested in collaborating, remember, we're doing stuff both on the shore here in the UK, but we're also doing stuff globally, then please, I will pull it at the bottom of the description. Mm-hmm. Please just send me an email. Let's connect. You never know. And there is no, the beauty about this sector is there's no silly idea. I mean, I'm talking to someone now who wants to come in and train young people around cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it makes sense, mm-hmm. you know, and people talk about the roads as an example. And I'm saying to that person, well, why don't we just teach the man them how to trade? Mm-hmm. Hello? Man them want to just make money, yeah? let's give them the tools and upskill them and let them make their peace. I, you know what I mean? So anyone out there that wants to collaborate, think outside the box and come up with an idea. Don't worry about the funding. We can put something together. But
are you going to give them the email address, or are we going to put it at the bottom?
Yeah, we're going to put it at the bottom of the description.
Okay, we're going to put it at the bottom of the description. Dej, like I've said it time and time before again, thank you so much for your time today. Did you enjoy it?
No, I loved it. Pleasure. We need a part two.
Definitely. We're going to check to see where everything is going. And Tree of Life, we need the Tree of Life update. Dej, thank you so much, man. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very
much. Guys, if you've gotten to this point, please just continue to show love to the podcast. Like, share, subscribe, comment. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.